This is WBAA Classical. I'm Greg Kostraba. The program, We've Come a Long Way, Ladies, a centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment through song, takes place this evening at 7 at the Tippecanoe Arts Federation in downtown Lafayette. The program is fairly elaborate, including historical songs, original footage, authentic costuming, and a spoken narrative. We have with us Audrey Johnson, who is the brains behind this program, and a couple of the composers she's invited to participate as well. Welcome to WBAA.
Well, thanks so much, Greg. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you here. Let's talk about the program itself. What was the genesis for it? How did you decide to work up a program like this, and why?
Sure, absolutely. So this is the inaugural program of my performing platform of the I Sing American Heritage Through Song, which is a solo performing platform with the mission of bringing American heritage to life through music, through classically based concert programming that features historical events from the music of our nation. And I had a lot of ideas for what this first concert would be, but once I realized, and this was last year, that the centennial of the 19th Amendment was 2020, that immediately moved the concert on the women's suffrage program to the forefront. And so what I did, the way that I kind of conducted my research was twofold. I kind of had two columns going at once, and one was just the main points historically of the movement, which was extremely extensive. You know, this women's suffrage movement spanned a period of over 72 years. It included both the Civil War and World War II. It included both the Civil War and World War I. And there were so many things that happened along the way that I felt were extremely relevant that people may not have known about. I certainly didn't know most of the information until I did this research. And so I had kind of this historical timeline going, and then juxtaposed right alongside that were the pieces of music that I found that would correspond to those things, or that maybe were so interesting on their own, such great pieces of music on their own, that I really felt like they needed to be included. And so, you know, from there, I would kind of expand the narrative on the historical side accordingly to make space for those pieces. So that's kind of how I started to build out the program.
Okay. Until before we talk about the program itself, how did you get interested in this subject? This is not opera. I assume you were trained as an opera singer.
Yes.
How did you go from I'm going to be singing at the Met to I'm going to be doing a program of historical songs dealing with the 19th Amendment?
Sure, that's a great question. And so several years ago, I was living in Germany. I was fortunate enough to have taken my career there, and it was a wonderful experience. I love the language. I love the culture. The opera world over there is something really quite special, and so I was so fortunate to have that opportunity. And yet, after a period of time, I just felt as though it was time to go back home. I'm a kind of an adventurous gal, and so I was surprised that I was so homesick in the way that I was, but I was. And as I decided to, you know, turn my sights back homewards and kind of decide what the next step would be for me, I realized that I felt as though there was something missing, that what I had been doing with my artistry, as wonderful as it was, just wasn't everything I was supposed to be doing. And so after I mustered the courage to finally give myself permission to reflect honestly, I realized that the most meaningful performing experiences of my career had actually not been the ones that were maybe, you know, the most fancy, the ones that you would, you know, write home about and want everyone to know about. They were kind of those under the radar performances, if you will, that involved the most direct and meaningful connections with audiences. And so that was something that I finally gave myself permission to realize about myself. These are things that, you know, typically it's said in the opera world, oh, that's paying your dues, you know, these outreach performances, things of that nature. But I really started to realize that for me personally, in my heart, those were the experiences that had meant the most, and that I really wanted to take charge and take the reins for my career and to have the career that I wanted to have that would have the most meaning for me personally. And at that same time, I had also been doing some genealogical research in my family tree. I knew that I had Revolutionary War patriots, but what I didn't realize was that his name was Samuel Woods, and he was a Minuteman in the Revolutionary War, in the first conflict of our nation's fight for independence. And finding that out was such a crystallizing moment for me. It was so deeply inspiring, and it was kind of that that extra piece that was missing that really tied everything together. Because the moment that I made that discovery, I realized what I want to do is I want to create these programs for under the radar venues where I can really make those direct connections with audiences. And I want to do it through the music of our nation. And so with that, Of the Icing was born. And with that, a flood of ideas came to me on all the different events within our nation's history that are worthy of sharing, that we can all learn from. And then, like I said, you know, when we realized that the centennial was lining up with 2020, that put the women's suffrage program front and center.
And let's talk about the program itself. There are songs in here that are songs written from that time period, but there are also some new compositions as well. What were you thinking about in terms of how they would fit into the program? And did you have any composers in mind?
Yes, as I was going through and I kind of had those two columns of, you know, the historical music or the other kind of relevant pieces that had already been composed, and compared those with the big historical pieces that really comprised the movement, I was able to see the gaps that I personally felt were not being met by the music that I was already able to find. And one of the big gaps that I found was actually before the official start of the women's suffrage movement. This was actually back before our country's inception in March of 1776, when Abigail Adams wrote what is now famously referred to as her Remember the Lady's Letter, that she wrote to her husband John as he was away, you know, at the Continental Congress and about to embark on writing our nation's laws, writing our, you know, our founding documents. And she urged him as he was doing so to remember the ladies. And she gave him a very foreboding warning that says that the ladies are determined to foment a rebellion if they are not given their due care and attention. But the other thing that I found so moving, and because I'd already known a little bit about the relationship between John and Abigail, and I knew that it truly was a very loving relationship, that he really did respect her, and that she was such an intelligent woman in the way that she carried herself, the way that she wrote. It was just so instantly apparent what a special woman she was. And I knew that I wanted a firsthand source material. I wanted that text to be set to music so that her true words could really be heard for the audience. And I had already been put in touch with a composer, Alicia Armstrong, that had gone to school with a good friend of mine from my hometown in Thomasville, Georgia. And when Alicia sent me a few of her vocal selections that she'd written for voice and piano, and I heard the loving, lilting, beautiful, lush musical landscapes that she created, I knew instantly that she would be the ideal person for setting this particular text.
And we have Alicia in the studio. Alicia, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's talk about your training for a little bit, and then how Audrey reached out to you and how that whole process worked.
Well, I'd like to think my training began before I was even born, because both of my parents are musicians. And I actually grew up in the Philippines for 10 years before coming back to the States for college. And so growing up between two cultures, I think my parents did a lot to connect us with the United States and with that part of our heritage, as well as the culture that we were growing up in. And of course, they also continually exposed me to wonderful music, both classical music and quite an eclectic mix of music, really. As Audrey mentioned, I did graduate studies in composition at the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. And during that time, I realized how much I loved vocal music in particular, and pairing powerful texts with equally powerful music. And so when Audrey got in touch with me in general about my work and then about this particular project, I was just thrilled to be able to work with her. And then we started looking at two letters together and really worked out what the text was going to be for both of these songs. And it really was a collaborative effort between the two of us to figure out how to take someone's own words and to prepare them to be set to music in a way that would be both effective musically and still very true to what these two women were saying in their letters. And it was a wonderful experience, and I'm just thrilled to have been able to be a part of this project.
Tell us a little bit about this particular text that you set, what it meant to you, and how you decided to set it the way you did.
Well, as Audrey and I discussed this letter, we really wanted to balance creating a text for the song that would work and be effective musically, but that also respected Abigail Adams' own words in the original letter. And the thing that struck me, I think the thing that struck both of us as we were collaborating on this text, was Abigail's spirit, her very strong-willed nature, and her outspokenness in her letter, in her writing to her husband, paired with a very tender address towards him. And it was very clear that they had wonderful open communication and a very loving relationship. And so balancing those two sides was very important to me in the music and in choosing what parts of the text to include, especially as Audrey and I discussed our own wonderful relationships with our own husbands and being thankful for having that own kind of relationship myself.
Yeah, and it's so nice to have both of you here for the premiere of this evening at the Wells Center, the Tippecanoe Arts Federation. Audrey, tell us about how those new compositions came about, why you decided to invite composers of our time to be a part of this project, and what kind of source material did you give them to work with?
Sure, absolutely. So as I mentioned, with kind of this two-column process where I was compiling this list of important historical songs, many of which, you know, directly related to the big pieces historically that I was dealing with. So that worked out really well. But then as I was really researching the history, there were these big gaps. So the Abigail Adams Remember the Lady's Letter is a great example of this, where I thought, okay, if there's not a piece that's already written, then there needs to be one, and I will make that happen. I will reach out to a female composer. I felt for this particular program, the composers involved simply had to be female, given the material involved and the history involved. And a really good friend of mine from my hometown of Thomasville, Georgia, actually, had gone to graduate school with two wonderful female composers that he recommended to me. And after hearing the music that they had already composed during their graduate studies, I knew that they would each be perfect for these pieces. And so Abigail Adams' letter is one. I also felt that the African-American perspective really needed to be included in a very specific way, and, you know, very respectful way that really mirrored what that experience was like. And so in combing through the variety of material available and finding the speech of Mary Church Terrell, The Progress of Colored Women, that she gave for the 50th anniversary of that Seneca Falls Convention in 1898 to an audience of largely white women. And really, her words were so moving to that audience because of the way that she conveyed that material, I felt was perfect. And finding composer Jessica Buford's artistic voice in the compositions that she had already written, I knew that she would be the perfect person to set an abridged version of that to music. So those are just two examples. There are also two more that happen. Those two happen in the first act of this program. And the second act, we also will hear from both of those composers once again with pieces.
Talk about Jessica's second song just a little bit, about where you came up with the idea for that, where you found the texts, and how that whole process worked.
Absolutely. So this is another example of a gap that I felt was not being filled by the historical music I was finding. And this is during the second generation of the suffrage movement, when we've got the Silent Sentinels of the National Woman's Party. So this is that kind of younger group of women that were growing a little bit impatient with the more traditional strategies that had been, you know, in place for so long with seemingly little progress to show for it. And these women were picketing in front of the White House, which was perfectly legal. But the problem was, when the U.S. was entering World War I, that created a political situation at home that really grew embarrassing for President Woodrow Wilson on the international stage. And so the women were arrested on completely fabricated charges of blocking traffic. And when that didn't seem to work, the tactics really turned violent. And so we have at the end of 1917 a horrible instance where a large group of protesters were arrested. They were sent not to a district jail, but actually to the Occoquan Workhouse, which was in Virginia. And when they arrived there, they were physically and violently, they were beaten, they were dragged, shoved, thrown against iron benches and beds. And eventually, when the women did not get their request to be treated and acknowledged as political prisoners, those women decided then to go on hunger strike. And the result was that they were force-fed. And I felt as though that information, as dark as, you know, and maybe unsettling as it may be, was really necessary and a vital piece for inclusion in this program to really, you know, inspire within us today an appreciation for just how far those women had to go to receive those rights. And there's a wonderful first handbook. It's called Jail for Freedom, written by Doris Stevens, who was one of the top gals in the National Woman's Party. And in addition to her own writing, she's also a wonderful curator of the firsthand source material of the other suffragists that were involved. And so she collected these fragmented writings that were smuggled out in secret on these little scraps of paper that the women were able to find, in these little, you know, nubs of pencils that they were able to find. And so those paired with the statements given directly after their release of these women, we really have this firsthand, very chilling account of the events that took place. And when I read about this and I read, you know, Jailed for Freedom, I thought, I really want to include those women's words, the exact words from those women, from their experiences. And when I realized that there was not already a composition that had been written to that text, I decided that we needed to remedy that and that I wanted to be the one to commission a female composer to write a song that would reflect those words. And hearing Jessica Buford's compositions that she had already written and the tonal atmosphere, the musical world that she was able to create in the melodic and harmonic structures that she used, I knew immediately that she would be the perfect person for such a piece.
And Jessica is here. Jessica, welcome.
Hello.
Hi. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. Audrey mentioned some songs you had written. Tell us about your kind of trajectory as a composer and what attracted you to this project.
I began writing compositions, I mean, as even a very young person. I grew up in a very musical family, musical background up in West Virginia, kind of epitomizing the musical mountaineers and tons of Appalachian influences, church, gospel, all sorts of different genres. During my time in graduate school at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, I was pursuing a musicology master's, and that's when I heard from Audrey. And my time had started to kind of gravitate towards historical studies, and so it was actually kind of perfect timing because I was still taking composition lessons. I wanted to be able to kind of draw all of those elements together that were both historical and compositional. And so it really just made a lot of sense.
Yeah. And what in these particular texts she gave you, did they have a certain resonance with you?
Certainly. There were scraps of these papers that were taken out of the Occoquan Workhouse. And I mean, they're just absolutely so poignant and powerful and moving. Like some of these just little details here and there from Jailed for Freedom and the scraps that were taken. I mean, they're so moving. There's no way that they couldn't begin to speak to you in some manner.
Now, in terms of the accompaniment for this, it seems to me that it's not, you know, flowing and lyrical. I mean, the tune and the song certainly is, but the accompaniment doesn't fit that way. It seems to really fit in with what the text is trying to say. Is that something you think about when you're setting a text?
Absolutely. When I'm writing vocal music, write the music in order to kind of serve the text and to enhance the text. I'm always consciously thinking about that, even when I'm taking a text such as these that were, you know, decidedly prose. They were not poetry. They were not lyrics of that sort. And kind of forming and shaping them into a libretto, like I'm constantly thinking about how are they going to work together and how is the music actually going to serve the text.
It's very powerful and very moving. So thank you. We're talking about We've Come a Long Way, Ladies, a centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment through songs this evening at 7 o'clock at the Tippecanoe Arts Federation. Audrey, with your history going back to the Revolution, you've connected with the Daughters of the American Revolution, and there's a project that is involved intricately with this program. Tell us a little bit about the project and how this program might be able to help fund it.
Yes, I am a very proud member of the General de Lafayette chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. And this, the DAR, for those of you that don't know, it's a wonderful nonpartisan service organization, one of the oldest in the country. And we are really dedicated to patriotism, historic preservation, and education. And so I'm so honored that this program, not only is this evening's program the premiere of this particular concert, the grand opening for Of the I Sing, but it is also the kickoff fundraising launch for the Greater Lafayette Underground Railroad Historic Preservation Project that is going to be undertaken by a community committee consisting of our local DAR chapter, the Tippecanoe County Historical Association, the Black Cultural Center, as well as a variety of other community leaders within Greater Lafayette. And this is so important because our community has such a rich history involving the Underground Railroad that people are simply not aware of because, for one thing, the locations that were these Underground Railroad stopping points are not marked. And so nobody really knows of their existence and nobody really knows the stories. And so what we are aiming to do is to raise funds to alleviate that. We would like to mark officially with the historical markers these spots. St. John's Episcopal Church would be one of the primary locations. That was a huge hub for the abolitionist activities that went on in Greater Lafayette at that time. There are other locations as well throughout the community, especially in the downtown Lafayette area, that we would really like to mark officially. We would also like to create a walking tour booklet that would be available for free for any visitors that would visit our area to be able to go and do a walking tour by themselves to really get that rich history. But in addition to a self-guided tour, we would also love, when we get these locations marked as we'd like to, we would like to have a community event that really shows both sides. We would have reenactors that would reenact the abolitionist side. We would have reenactors that would reenact the freedom seeker side, to really have that as a multifaceted and fully comprising the full situation that those individuals undertook within our history.
And this concert, there's no tickets are required for the program, but is there going to be a hat passed around to help fund this?
Yes, absolutely. So that is correct. It is a free will donation offering. We're largely able to offer this with free admission thanks to the Indiana Arts Commission grant that we received. We are so fortunate and so grateful for that support from that organization. And so that's going, you know, largely to pay the fees involved in putting this program on so that we can offer it for free to the community. But of course, again, this being a fundraising launch, it would be wonderful to really start that accumulation of funds to go towards what we feel is a very worthy project. But yes, come as you are, come freely. If you are able to donate or not, we welcome you and we would be so happy to share this with you.
Audrey Johnson, who will be presenting a program this evening at 7 o'clock at the Tippecanoe Arts Federation. We've Come a Long Way, Ladies, a centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment through song. Thanks also to Alicia Armstrong and Jessica Buford, composers that were part of this project. No tickets are required. Details are at oftheising.com. And as Audrey mentioned, it is the launch of her program called Of the I Sing. Mm-hmm. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
For WBAA Classical, I'm Greg Kostraba.